it's me, Jordana Bragg, on a Friday, and I'm here with Sarah Tuck. Today is Friday the 5th of August 2016. Weather report, it's raining with a slight chance for storm later on today with a high of 8 degrees overnight.
It's chilly.
Yeah, it is. So I saw the show The Offensive Nipple Saturday the 23rd last month at City Gallery, which is co-written and performed by you and Jess Holly Bates.
Yeah.
And I just need to, I'm going to talk to you about it.
Awesome.
Can you describe for anyone who might not have seen the show the premise or structure of The Offensive Nipple Show?
Yeah, so The Offensive Nipple Show is basically a sketch show, kind of delving into these ideas of body reclamation and how we kind of look at our bodies and body sovereignty and being women and the double standard on the nipple front.
On the nipple front.
And
that old
it's kind of comedy mixed with seriousness. So we really like to go between the body is a sacred thing and the body is a silly thing, rather than delve into the body as a sexy thing at all.
Yes, this is literally leading to like a lot of my points.
Oh, great.
Bang. So I wanted to talk first of all about humour. All I ever watch on YouTube is female comedians, stand-up comedians, so Sarah Silverman, Amy Schumer, Whoopi Goldberg. Humour is something that I've been asked about also to address in my own work. I guess whether it's there to take the edge off the political message or I guess it comes out of a fear for me that I'm going to be taken less seriously. What is the role of humour in the work, or why do you want to make people laugh?
Yeah, well, I guess like laughter, people laughing is inaccessible, is more accessible for people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I think of myself as quite funny. like, I'm a physical comedian. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what my
theatre style is. The humour in the piece is extremely physical. It's very, very physical, yeah.
And I don't know, like, for me, there was not... We weren't like, oh, it's got to be funny. It just kind of naturally comes out when we really delve into these, you know, intelligent vaginas, for example, which
yes.
is the part of the show where we pull down our pants and put eyes on our vaginas and talk like an intelligent businesswoman. Like, that premise in itself is quite funny because of this thing of it's just so unexpected. It's so surprising, and it's something completely different to the way that women are perceived at all.
I wrote down about that specific part. I saw it for like a visual metaphor for the vagina monologues, which is by Eve Ensler, which has literally been described as probably the most important piece of political theatre of the last decade.
Yeah.
So I saw that connection there. I guess what I thought was important, specifically about what I call them the action of the vagina monologues, was showing the female body as nude outside of a sexual context.
Yeah.
And I think for me, another thing about it was the humour was so fast-paced, and there was so much happening, and there were so many interlocking sequences and scenes that the nudity actually became secondary to what was being said and what was being played out, which I found, even for myself, like quite shocking that I was able to like let go of that, because it is quite shocking to see a nude person, and there's only very few contexts you get to see it, but on stage it's a whole another space, it's a whole other realm.
Well, I really love that. Like, I really love that. I mean, people, friends who'd see the show after the show would be like, well, I've seen your vagina now, and I'm like, no, you actually haven't. Like, technically you haven't seen my vagina, you've just seen my hair.
Also you don't get to have possession. I did a performance piece at 17 Tory Street called The Dirt on Me and You, We Lose a Little Ground, where I got naked. And I had, a lot of people commenting post-performance about the fact that they'd seen me naked or how they felt about my naked body and seeing it. And it's strange because even though I was the one that decided to do that action, I still felt kind of invaded. I was like, help.
Yeah.
Dare you have looked at me when I, you know, there's this strange...
We do, and it's because people are curious, right? Like,
yes.
The nude body is fetishized, mm-hmm, and it's yeah, it is a political statement, and people don't look at their own bodies. Like, it took me a long time to look at the mirror and be like, oh, this is actually what people see.
To look at someone else's body, I think, is only intimidating for someone who hasn't looked at their own or who doesn't want to think about their own, especially bodies, especially female bodies that aren't airbrushed, they're not adapted to look...
they've got dimples, they've got hair, we've got moles, we've got all of that.
It's all real, it's all coming at you, live. Yeah.
And it's really, it is quite confronting.
Yeah.
I mean, I came from quite a conservative upbringing, I guess, and nudity was also like, no, put some clothes on, and we didn't share our bodies, and we didn't, and like, we bathed together up until 12, where I started growing pubic hair, and my sister was like, what's that? Oh. And then it was like, ah, body shame for the rest of my teen years.
Yeah, and welcome to that.
So it's really, I don't know, this show has really drawn a lot out of me in terms of actually being really comfortable in my body. And after every show, I'm like, man, I feel good. Just run around for an hour naked in front of 100 people.
I feel great. Yeah. It's what I said about it, I guess, was the body, even in it, no one can see me, but I'm doing bunny ear quotes. Even in a progressive society, it's still something really scary for people, but also ultimately fascinating to everyone to see the naked body. But a woman's nipple and vagina are this kind of strangely sacred grey area, to the point where even talking about them as if they actually exist is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
So to see it and to also talk about it and then to go away and think about it, that's what I think is great about the show. And that it sort of disclaims or takes ownership of the idea that nipples are offensive or seen as, in the way that they are policed, I guess. The publicity images for the show are you with your face next to a nipple, both painted like a cubist underground rave.
Yes.
Who came up with that concept?
Oh, that was Jess's idea.
How much do I love it? It's so good.
Well, we realised when... I picked something up from work at Capital E and realised that it's the same as their marketing collateral.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of their building.
So it was a subliminal thing. It just got in. Yeah,
But, yeah, the idea just... We just kind of came up with it in about 10 minutes and all of a sudden we had paint and Jess's drawing on my face.
Mm-hmm,
And we were like, this is going to be so good. It just kind of happened all naturally. Yeah.
Organically. I love it. It's so good. It's such good publicity. Okay, here's just throwing it at a topic. Do you have any thoughts on Rihanna's Instagram being temporarily suspended because she showed her nipples? Or what are your thoughts on the hashtag Free the Nipple movement?
Wow. Okay, first of all, I didn't know that it's been temporarily removed because she showed nipple, I just think that's absolutely disgusting. I mean, come on,
it actually happened.
It's a nipple. Like,
it's Rihanna.
Everyone has nipples, you know. Is it because her nipple isn't pink? Like, or is it because it's got it too hairy? Or is it not up to a certain beauty standard? I'm sitting here touching my nipples as I'm talking about this. Yeah, and second, what was the second question again?
What are your thoughts on the hashtag Free the Nipple movement?
Wow, that's interesting, because when we first started making the show, we were like, yes, we like jumped on the back of it, and there was supposed to be a Free the Nipple march in Auckland in around November.
That's right, yes.
And I planned to fly up for it, but just didn't get around to booking flights because they're so expensive. And so we kind of latched onto this, and then Jess watched the Free the Nipple movie, which... I don't know if anyone has seen it, but it's actually a Sundance film. It really doesn't... Yeah, this is actually one of the things that we talk about in the show for the Intelligent Vaginas. They're talking about this movie, Free the Nipple. And we say, like, it just does not complicate the male gaze in the slightest. You know, it's actually set up for the male gaze. It's completely contradictory. At the end of the film,
the male gaze.
It just follows this love story where one girl's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And the other girl's like, come on, come with me. And they like run to a rooftop and then she like lifts up her shirt and she's like, whoa. And it's like this beautifully like romanticized scene where she's just like, yes, free the nipple. Like, look at me, I'm a lesbian for a week. Like, look at me go.
I'm so free. So bohemian.
I know. And just realize that like, actually, yes, free the nipple is good as an access point to get
Absolutely.
People really understanding what the movement is. Mm-hmm. But in terms of that movie, it doesn't challenge anything.
I think for me as well, my interest in the hashtag free the nipple movement is, I mean, largely because of the hashtag. It exists online. And I think in the first, I guess, cyber feminist manifestos, the internet was conceived of as a utopic or a new space for women to reinvent the, you know, ongoing misogyny and we're going to take over, and this was seen to be a positive thing. And hashtag free the nipple was there to distribute the knowledge or, you know, this sort of like, if not, this sort of like 101 feminism, but feminism nonetheless. But then, of course, online is just people, and part of people is men, so the internet is largely just a huge misogynistic space. Yeah. So the hashtag free the nipple movement has been, I think, interesting. I think it's sort of...
it's settled a bit at the moment.
It's definitely settled a bit, but I think there's going to be another, prediction that there will be another kind of movement along the same vein.
It's hard because, like, I'm sure the intentions around it were genuine, but it's been taken out of context. So people, I don't know, I go on Twitter and I search, or we did this quite often, search free the nipple, and there would be people taking like a really sexy photo of themselves.
Yeah, and you're like, perfect.
With hashtag free the nipple, and yes, like, yeah, free the nipple, but actually, I don't know, for me, it's an act of body sovereignty, it's an act of respect for a body, and if that's respectful for you to demonstrate your body like that's fine, but you have to understand the audience that is. I don't know.
Yeah.
You kind of
Also, what I wanted to say, I guess, is women, specifically feminist women, going back to the offensive nipple show, have been portrayed as aggressive, or to my mind, early feminism, aggressive or angry. Not that we aren't, but it's in a negative space to sort of pre-classify our emotions. I guess what I want to say is funny women, specifically funny women speaking about aspects of the female lived experience, they do shift that landscape a little bit. So I wanted to talk about two scenes within the offensive nipple show, which I found compelling. The part where you discuss with Jess being a bad feminist, or the examples of being a bad feminist, and the existential crisis you have on the phone with the operator to pack. So the conversation about bad feminism, or things that people might do that sit outside their own conceptions of what it means to be or act feminist. Firstly, is this an association to Roxane Gay's 2014 essay, Bad Feminism?
Well,
It just seemed so close. Like, there's so many interlocking literary or other extensions. It's part of a feminist practice is to always reference other women.
Yeah.
So I was, because I know you mentioned Marina Abramović, of course, my ears are just like on fire.
Yeah.
But was that a direct reference to her essays?
That's funny you should say that, because I started reading that and it almost changed my life, but I just didn't...
not quite. Yeah, just as close. No.
Has impacted in one way or another, but I just didn't even pick up on that reference when doing that scene. Like, it just didn't really connect those dots together, but definitely similar.
I was reading a review of Bad Feminism and thinking about that scene where you list things, and I don't know a specific example, but I remember at one point you turning to the audience and sort of was more or less like a proclamation, being like, does anyone else have anything? Anyone here a bad feminist?
Asking the audience.
And that was enough to make me completely crumble into introspection. I was like, oh, I can't. There's so many things, but I just found that level of introspection real fascinating.
Well, a lot of the times, a lot of our shows, we've actually left enough of a gap to have an awkward silence where people feel like it's like a cathartic release for them, where they're like, yes, I've got one. And I've had multiple people come up to me after the shows being like, I have one, even though they're not really feminist fails, but, you know, if it gets the people thinking about the ways they interact with their body and interact with other people, I think it's still beneficial.
Because there was a review of Bad Feminism, as I was saying, and it said, it was similar to the way I felt about that scene, and it said, it gives us permission to take up the sword of feminism while laying down the shield of policed authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Huge.
Just think about that. and I wrote about that in relation to that. I think the level of introspection is great. The question of what is good and what is bad opens up more questions about what feminism can be, not just what it is or isn't. So it gives it an individual sense of where is my line with feminism, what will I not cooperate with among other people who identify as feminist. I just thought that was such a great scene. So, so good.
It's kind of, also in that scene, it's not two women hating on each other because we're not being a proper feminist.
Yes.
It's actually two women loving each other because we're getting it wrong and we're trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and it embraces flaws or failures quite openly, instead of, because that's another thing as well, where women are generally seen as competition, or there's a competitiveness, so to just be open about not always getting it right is quite a political act.
The show is pretty huge for that, like
full stop.
Jess and I just really making sure that we are connecting with each other and loving each other in each scene,
because
women hating women is such a huge issue and problem.
Toxic.
And it's like internalized misogyny that kind of comes out in us that really provokes this behavior where we bitch about each other and we talk about each other and we comment on each other's skin, or I don't like her handbag or anything like that. It's like really, really, really detrimental.
Yes. The second scene was when you're on the phone with Tipac.
It's actually Dipak.
Dipak.
So thought it was Tipac, but when we were on the phone to the bank again, realized that it's Dipak. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for Dipak. But his name's Dipak.
So he works at the bank. This is a man. So did you actually have this form of communication with him where you basically, for those who haven't seen it, there's a monologue where I guess you're having an existential crisis on the phone with someone who's an operator for the bank.
Yeah.
This is me, like, shooting straight for what I want to see, but it is intertwined with your coming out story.
Yeah. So the speech is called I Came Out Like This.
I came out like, oh, that's so good.
I came
good.
Out like this.
and I specifically liked in that scene when you acted out each person's reaction, and also when you referenced yourself as having a Helen Clark vibe.
Yeah.
My general Helen Clark vibe or something along those lines. It was so good.
Yeah.
I was wondering, do you have the script with you and can you read a short section?
Yeah, I can.
That would be great.
Just read a short bit.
Yeah.
So yesterday I was on the phone to my bank manager, Dipak, who was taking my driver's license details, and I realised that my driver's license is due for renewal soon. And I was like, oh my god, it just struck me, you know, like, how has it been 10 years since I got my driver's license? Like, who am I? Where am I? What am I? And like, I should know by now, right? Like, I'm a ripe age of 24, and I'm on the phone to Dipak questioning whether I have lived out the dream I envisioned for myself as a plump 15-year-old. You know? Now, have I married Chad Michael Murray? Am I living in a treehouse with my Mercedes-Benz and my 7 children and my platinum ring and my 2 turtles and Julie is my best friend, and are we going to Spain on a business trip, flying first class? Am I a millionaire? You know those kind of pram diagrams that you, you know, do for yourself? Yeah, like, that was real for me. Yeah, who am I? Where am I? What am I? And look at me now. I'm doing it. I'm killing it. I'm doing it. And Mum, please don't stop sending me money.
Yeah.
What I realise now is that back then I didn't actually want to marry Chad Michael Murray. I actually wanted to marry Ashley Simpson. Yeah, I know. And as you can tell from my tragus piercing and my general Helen Clark career-driven vibe, I date women. And I'm your hero. And I'm doing it for all of us. I grew up in a small town with conservative parents, so not exactly the career path Mrs. Dowling advocated for me. BA in gay. But it wasn't shocking for me to realise that this is the person I was. It just kind of happened to me, you know. I just woke up one morning with morning sickness, and it turns out I was pregnant with my lesbianism. 3 months later, I started to show, because I got my tragus pierced. And 6 months after that, I only ever wore Vans and skated a lot. It's true. And 9 months later, I birthed the news to the world, and... well, if that's the path you've chosen for yourself, good luck. I knew it! Oh, I can just tell. You know, look at you. Is that, like, because of a hormone imbalance? Like, too much testosterone? You know you can drink spearmint tea for that. Yeah, it really got rid of my chin hair when I started drinking spearmint tea. But you have long hair. Oh, my God. Have you actually been in love with me this whole time? But I thought you had a boyfriend when you were 17. Who turned you gay? But you're a Capricorn. She doesn't love you. She's manipulating you to think you're gay. But you would have made a really great mother. I was relying on you for grandchildren. Get her out of the house! Like, these are, you know, it's 2016, and why is it so difficult to understand that I'm a woman who wants to date women? Like, I should have just come out as a leprechaun. It would have made things easier. And when I told my mum over the phone 10 minutes before I was about to turn up home with my sparkly new girlfriend, she just cried and was like, just come home! Just come home! I was like, I am, Mum. I'm on my way. And it didn't help that my girlfriend wouldn't get out of the car, and my stepdad was telling her to get off the property, and it wasn't a nice and easy time, you know. It was... yeah. But I actually haven't heard a nice and easy time story, you know? Like, I'm really waiting for the day where someone's like, oh, I told my mum about my girlfriend, and she brought us a house. Like, that would solve the housing crisis. Adepec, I've solved it for us. But, you know... it was such a big win for me when I kind of realised and accepted this of myself. And now, like, I've got a new dreadlock, I've got some new high-top Vans, and if you think that isn't a fashion choice, trust me, if I wanted to be practical, I would just wear steel-cap boots. I mean, I could look the part if I want to. I could go full dyke on this, right? And it feels... We all could, because literally steel-cap boots, like, $49.99 from the warehouse, we could all do it. It feels great because my gender is finally realised in the world, and my gender is Alanis Morissette, or, you know, this microphone stand, or, you know, this cup of water, or this fire alarm. When the gay rights marriage bill palaver kind of came up, and I mean, I call it a palaver, but it was a really exciting time. I got caught up talking to my old supervisor in the staff room, who said, but who would walk you up and down the aisle? And I was like, well, first of all, no one's going to walk me back down the aisle. Someone's only going to walk me up, and it's going to be my German Shepherd. Yeah, her face was hilarious. And you know what else? Me and Ashley Simpson, we've already decided what we're going to wear. She's going to wear her power suit, and I'm going to wear my silk dungarees. And we'll be rich, and we'll live in Spain with our kombucha startup, with 5 children and 2 adopted, couple ginger cats, matching mopeds, Karen Walker skull engagement rings, and I'll never wear clothes or makeup again, and I just can't tell you how happy it makes me to be able to live out my gender this cheaply. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I coughed all the way through that, but I loved it. So good.
It's so emotional that
it's so good that I got a flu. Amazing. Yeah. I don't even want to talk about that. That was just a thing that happened. Now I'm going to play a fun game that I play with everyone that I podcast with. Generally it's called 10 fun questions, but today it's called 8 fun questions because I could only think of 8. So this is going to be fun.
8?
Well, in the monologue you said you're a Capricorn, but the first question is, what's your star sign?
So, yes, I'm a Capricorn. And my rising sign is Taurus.
Wow, I'm a Gemini ascending.
Ah, yeah. Right.
I know.
And my moon sign is in Aries, which I was like...
Moon and Aries.
Thank God I've got some fire somewhere.
Yeah, right? Yeah. My moon's in Pisces. So...
It's okay.
She'll be right, love.
Sure.
Okay, if you could have any other star sign other than your own, which one would you be?
Well, probably Aries.
Yeah, but then you'd be Aries, Moon, Aries, Sun, and, like, that would...
Well, would I don't know, I just kind of like that, I don't know, I'd definitely just pick a fire sign, I'd reckon, any other one.
Any kind of fire sign, yeah.
Yeah, but, I don't know, I do like, I am very ground and earth, and very, you know, people would meet me and be like, oh, typical Capricorn, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah, easy, yeah, people meet me and they're like, yep, yeah, Aries, got it,
yeah.
I get it. Cowboys or astronauts?
Look, I'd probably have to say cowboys because I'm a sucker for a good, for some boots and like the hat.
That's a lot.
And kind of really like chewing on, you know, those kind of like long piece of grass that you can get in farms. Like, just really love that.
Yeah.
That feeling like... Yeah, really like to transform into that masculine.
I like to ask people this question because it's something I think about a lot myself, you know. Am I a cowboy or astronaut kind of gal? If you could be anyone for one day, who would you be, why, and what would you do?
Oh, my God. Well, I would definitely want to be Patti Smith.
Bang, bang. And why?
Because she is... a lady on the go.
Yes,
she
is so true.
Yeah, I just...
Would you be Patti Smith and then listen to Patti Smith while you were Patti Smith?
Yes, and I would do all of the things that Patti Smith does, especially in her book M-Train, where she just goes and sits in cafes and drinks coffee and writes and takes boardwalks and just flies to London to go into a cheap motel and watch detective stories. Like, it just sounds awesome.
See, my answer to this, if my answer were to be I would be Patti Smith, would be I would be Patti Smith and then I would go and find myself and, like, make out with me. And then leave.
Such a good
idea. I can tell you're... Yeah, so that's Aries. Describe yourself in 5 words, or a sentence, if you will.
A sentence. Oh, wow. Quite grounded, I feel. Grounded, like, really love the earth and the soil and getting in nature and... nature driven. Recently, well, it was a year ago now, I swam every day in the ocean naked for a month in the winter, and just really changed my life.
I just got a cold again just from thinking about you swimming in the ocean naked.
I highly recommend it. Love nature.
Wow. Okay. Describe me in 5 words or 1 sentence.
Jordana is the best boss lady I have ever met in my life.
Thank you. Yes.
And everyone should look forward to an interaction with you. Because I do.
Perfect. All right, that's what I wanted. There's more Aries for me. Give me compliments. Tell me something I don't know. See, this is a good one because this is testing how intelligent you think I am.
Okay. Well, this is something that I didn't know, but this was a conversation that I had in the staff room. All good conversations happen in staff rooms.
True.
But I walked into this one where we were talking about pecking order in chickens.
Okay.
The pecking order and how that works. Not exactly sure how it works, but it's kind of like a hierarchy where chickens peck at each other and kill each other to get to the top.
Yes.
But more interestingly, forget hierarchical structure. Let's talk about the fact that
down.
Some hens can transition into, roosters, yes, or cockerels, is it?
Yeah, either one.
So how that works is that what happens is that sometimes the ovaries get pecked accidentally die, and therefore they don't have enough estrogen in their body, and so testosterone takes over and they start to turn into male chickens.
What?
I mean male
roosters, cockles.
And it's a physical change, like you can see the
Goodness.
Physical difference, and I just think it's the most beautiful natural occurrence in the world. But
Eva,
yes,
thank you for telling me something I don't know. What's your favourite day of the week?
I really love a good Sunday.
Cool.
Because it's the day that everyone starts to think about their mental well-being.
It's strange. It's strange even in a non-religious society. Sundays are kind of sacred.
Yeah.
They kind of like leave me alone.
Yeah.
Ish.
And
you
can be unapologetic about anything on a Sunday. Like you don't have to.
If I didn't look at your email, it's a Sunday.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's
unspoken.
I really love referring to everything as Sunday. So like even when I'm driving on the road during the week, I'm like, it's not a Sunday drive. Like
it's not.
Just a different vibe on a Sunday.
Yeah. I'm more of a Tuesdays kind of gal. I don't have another question. So actually that was 7 fun questions.
7.
Yeah. So also last 2 things, you said that Jess Holly Bates, the woman who is alongside you in the Fence of Nipple show, did a TED talk recently about switching code or slipping code.
Yeah, code slipping. Yeah.
Where can we find that? Is it on TED Talks? I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, it was TEDx Auckland. And it's on YouTube, or if you go into the Offensive Nipple Show Facebook page, where we also have a boosted campaign.
I was about to say that. Yes.
But you can find it on there, and it just really talks about some of the ideas that are explored in the Nipple Show, which is code slipping, like this thing of where we slip outside of our stereotype, for example. Thinking that vaginas can't talk about anything other than themselves, but actually they're these intelligent businesswomen that are talking about really new informative ideas around the water cooler.
Yeah. Perfect. And you're looking to go to, is it Sydney and Melbourne next month?
Yeah.
Is this, if you get the boosted campaign funding, or what is the deal here?
We're definitely still going in. When we did the show at the Fringe Festival, we won an award, the Tiki Tour Award. Thank you, Fringe.
Thanks, Fringe.
Which, just kind of supports us going to Melbourne Fringe Festival. And then Sydney also rang us and was like, can you come here too? And we were like, hey.
While you're in the neighbourhood, why not?
Yeah. And because the Offensive Nipple Show has a whole bunch of activations around it, so we kind of like to broaden up the conversation. So we've got a public skinny dipping in Melbourne and Sydney.
Cool.
And then breastfeeding picnic.
Great stuff.
We also have a body sovereignty performance art collective that kind of goes along the same idea. So we're also raising funds to support other arts practitioners to join the conversation.
Perfect. Well, I would recommend everyone go onto the Offensive Nipple Facebook page and check both of those things out. The TEDx Auckland talk with Jess Holly Bates, and obviously give them some money to continue on this great work that you do.
Thank you
so much for being here with me today. This has been Sarah Tuck on the Offensive Nipple Show.
This podcast is brought to you by Local Stories, a collective gallery initiative funded by the Wellington City Council Public Art Fund and Creative New Zealand.